Welcome to Women in Translation, a series showcasing the richness of European women authors, translators, and more.
In this episode, Albanian translator and poet Ani Djika speaks with host Suzana Vujovic. This conversation first aired on April 30th, 2022, as part of the Hidai Edi Bregu Lectures in Albanian Studies at DePaul University.
So hello everyone, and welcome to our sixth event of the year titled The Translator's Craft. We have Ani Djika. I'm translating Albanian literature, part of an ongoing virtual series that I've organized in partnership with Gazmen Kaplani. The series is called Albanian Literature Today, Meditations on the Craft of Literary Translation Across Genres and Spaces, and it's part of our annual Hidai Edi Bregu Lecture Series in Albanian Studies at DePaul University in Chicago. In the series of one-hour virtual readings and discussions with contemporary Albanian authors and translators, we aim to capture the breadth of Albanian literature available to English-speaking audiences, as well as to provide a space for substantive exchange between authors, translators, and members of the broader community, both here and abroad. The sessions are moderated with an eye to the Albanian literary tradition, historical legacies, the current literary landscape, the craft of literary translation, and the politics of translation in a globalized world. In the course of each section, we aim to examine the mechanics of the translation process, especially with respect to translation from quote-unquote minor languages and cultures of the world. We aim to bring a deeper historical awareness to each work under consideration, that is, the particular time and place that gave rise to these works of art. In other words, what specific historical events and personal circumstances inform the creation of these works? Where do they fit within the longer tradition of Albanian letters? And how have they addressed the varied and multifaceted experiences of the Albanian collective, both at home and abroad? Finally, we ask, how do these works address the ever salient topics of migration, immigration and displacement, post-communism and transition, and in the case of Kosovo, recent independence, post-war reconciliation, and a coming to terms with the past traumas of war? We're honored to have with us today Ani Djika. Ani's among the most prolific and renowned translators of contemporary Albanian literature today. She's translator of a wide range of Albanian work, authors, sensibilities, and literary genres, and a poet herself. Her work is a testament to the versatility, cultural mediation, or brokering, and nimbleness that's central to the translator's craft. In this conversation, we'll be discussing some of her most recent translations, including Julia Djika's Memories Pretend to Sleep, published with Laertes Press in 2020, and Lulieta Leshanaku's Negative Space, published with New Directions in 2018, as well as the particular considerations that go into Albanian to English translation and the translator's role in making legible and even advocating for minor cultures and languages in a global literary arena. I'd like to start with a bit of biographical information about Ani. She's an Albanian-born writer, literary translator, educator, and author of 8 books and chapbooks of poetry. Her translation of Leshanaku's Negative Space was shortlisted for the International Griffin Poetry Prize. She's a recipient of several awards and fellowships, including the NEA, the English Pen, the Robert Pinsky Global Fellowship, and most recently, Restless Books 2021 Prize for New Immigrant Writing. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome you here, Ani, and to get started with our conversation.
Thank you. Thank you so much to you, especially because I remember you had this vision and dream of having these conversations with many translators of Albanian literature for a while. You've had this, and I'm so happy to see that you have brought it forth. And I've been watching the other conversations, and it's been really enlightening. And I'm really grateful to be here as well and included. And also thank you to the DePaul University Hidai Bregu. Now I'm thinking in Albanian, katedra. The word is coming to me in Albanian only, but yeah, thank you both very much for having me.
Thank you. So my first question, I'd like to just step back and ask you to talk about, first of all, you've translated a range of different genres and works, both from Albania and Kosovo, but your translation of Lulieta Leshanaku is among your first projects, as I understand, and is one of your most well-known and celebrated. Could you tell us a bit about this book, like how you came to translate it and what insights you've gained in the course of translating it? What were some of the challenges that came up as you were translating?
Yes. So I suppose it is the first book that was published, the first translated book, Negativis. And I've been translating, I guess now, maybe over 15 years, perhaps. But I did start with a lot of translations for my mother. Like I would translate for her from English to Albanian. And then I started the MFA program at Boston University for poetry. And I was taking a class there in literary translation with Rosanna Warren. And that's where one of the projects was to translate. It was your choice. You could pick either one particular author or short works or a series of poems by several different ones. And so I was always interested in women authors from Albania. So obviously my mother, and then I had just happened to come across Lulieta Leshchenaku's first books in English, which were fresco selected poems translated by Henry Zara-Ely and a couple of other people, as well as Child of Nature, which I think came into press that year, 2009, I believe, hopefully I'm not wrong. So I did meet with her that year. I went to one of her readings because I had read the previous books, Fresco, and I really fell in love with her use of imagery and figurative language in terms of phrase and her way of like how she builds an argument and how she makes connections between something she's observing right here in front of her and then larger themes or more abstract concepts. So I was always drawn to her work, but I only had read her in English up until that point. I went to see her and met her, and then we got to talking by email. And I was translating some of her works for my project in my class, and I won a prize there. And then I just asked if I could translate more to submit more in literary journals. And so it started that way. I was lucky. I was getting some publications then and some works placed in publication. And then I think I was translating her book, Pothua Ese Die, which is translated as Almost Yesterday, her collection. And so I kept translating that. And while I was doing that, she was writing Homo Antarcticus, which was the next collection. And then basically I just kept translating. So both of those collections. And so Negative Space is a collection of both of those books that came out in Albania. I don't remember the years exactly, but yeah, I'm sorry. I don't remember when they came out in Albania, but they were closely published one after the other, I think, Albanian. So I just kept translating. And then some of the challenges working with this book, mostly time, because I teach full time and also try to work some on my own writing and then translating. I started with one book and then continued to the other. So I think that was a challenge. And obviously the fact that I'm not a native speaker of English, but obviously it does sound like I'm fluent, and I would say I'm fluent, but I still think it's difficult sometimes with English usage to know if I've said something in English correctly. And other challenges, also the fact that she's like a master of simile or other uses of figurative language. And so I would always try the hardest to make those kinds of images come as original and read as new in English as they do in the original language. The insights, I think maybe the main thing that I think of is how free the whole process was of translating her work, because I never felt like she dictated what I should translate or in what order or stuff like that, or asking me how much more time do you have or when will you finish. So that kind of freedom was always there, and I felt like that allowed me to dive or immerse myself into her work and her world. Like that kind of freedom really helps the process for me. So that's an insight I have, that if you're thinking to translate, if anybody's listening that has that as a goal, it's great to develop a relationship with the author that is open and it's allowing you to take some charge in your own process.
So did you have a lot of conversations with Lulieta about certain choices that you were making as a translator, or was that something that you were dealing with on your own?
Yes, always. And especially in the beginning. So this was a work that took years to finish, at least 4 years, I think, because it was two books. And then also I was working and other reasons. So it took, so I would constantly, in the beginning, I would constantly email her or ask her, especially because her, some of her figurative language is very mystified mystified would be the word, mystifying. So I would ask her, did you mean this or did you mean that? Just so that I would make sure that what's coming across in English is what the author intended. So I do remember sending a lot of back and forth emails and worrying that I might be bothering her, but it never was that way, or at least I didn't feel like I was bothering, but I think that was the worry. And in fact, it was the opposite. Yeah, it was the opposite, that there was a lot more freedom. What else did you ask? So
I have another question about, because this came from two different collections in the original language, I wonder, what would you say is the unifying thread of the collection that became what is today Negative Space in the English edition?
I think it is the fact that it's this metaphor, negative space. Mm-hmm. So maybe this is, yeah, when you look at this photo, actually, I did not choose the cover either, but any photographer, if you are discussing photography, you do come across the term negative space. And that's when you look at the image, obviously you are paying attention to the subject matter on the foreground, but it's good to pay attention to the rest of the space in between the objects. So I think the unifying theme for this book is that she's looking back at history, or Albanian, particularly Albanian history, and certain experiences of people who lived during communism, but she doesn't come across as speaking directly as to what they suffered through, but the descriptions of those experiences allow for the reader to see those negative spaces, to see the whole picture.
What's been left out of the official narrative. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love the images that come through in Negative Space. So I would love if you could read us one of the poems or one of your favorites.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I do love Negative Space itself, but only because it's a little bit long. I might read something else. So maybe Almost Yesterday, which is the title poem for her, one of the books. Mm-hmm. Almost Yesterday. Strangers are building a new house next door. They shout, swear, cheer, hammers and a bustle of arms. They whistle melodies, bookended by hiccups. Their large window opens to the east. A lazy boy in sandals drags a bucket of water half his size. Sedative. The world holds its breath for one moment. The page turns. Trucks loaded with cement leave the symbols of infinity in the dirt. Along the wall, a plumb line measures the height like a medallion hanging into space or from someone's neck whose face nobody bothers to look at. They started with the barn. This is how a new life begins, with an axiom. I remember my father returning sweaty from the fields at lunch break. He and mother coming out of the barn, tidying their tangled hair in a hurry, both flushed, looking around in fear like two thieves. Their bedroom was cool and clean on the second floor of the house. I still ask myself, why in the barn? But I also remember that the harvest was short that year, that livestock was hungry, we were on a budget, and switched the lights off early. I was 12, my sleep deep, my curiosity numbed, tossed carelessly to the side like mounds of snow along the road. But I remember the barn clearly, as if it were yesterday, almost yesterday. You cannot easily forget what you watch with one closed eye, the death of the hero in the film, or your first eclipse of the sun.
Thank you. That was beautiful. So what were some of the questions that, do you remember what kinds of issues you were grappling with in this poem in particular?
Oh, yeah.
One thing that I wanted to say about your about your translations is that they're very elegantly rendered and they're perceptive on a very deep level. And you are a poet in your own. So I wondered how you think your background as a poet is informing your work as a translator, is influencing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Yeah, maybe I'll just mention that, like in the first stanza, they whistle melodies bookended by hiccups. Actually, in the original, they whistle melodies bitten, like when you bite something, right? Bitten from a hiccup on both sides. So I had to like first ask Lolita what that meant, because I wasn't 100% sure. I understood it, but then when you read the rest, like the rest of the stanza and the stanza that comes after it, this is construction workers, they're working here, and there's these hammers, the sounds of hammers, bustling of arms. And so what's being bitten what's doing the biting is the hiccups, somebody's hiccuping, and that sound, which is in the background of all this other commotion. It's almost like a bookending. It begins and it ends with that. So instead of saying in both sides, I use the word bookended. And I did lose the bite because it didn't sound right in English. Right. They whistle melodies. Yeah. So always having to negotiate which word might have to go and what would best fit or replace it in English. Mm-hmm. Having to do that. Other times, Lolita would also, once she would see the translation, if it didn't sound quite right in English, I would let her know, then she would maybe change the original in Albanian. And so if you are one of those people who's like maybe looking at her published books in Albanian and looking at this book, and you might find, oh, but this is not exactly how she said it. Maybe it's because we worked beyond the original, like some things might have changed in the process. So that's also there. And then, let's see. What else did you ask me? I forgot, sorry.
I wondered how your background as a poet is informing your translation or your way of approaching a translation.
Yeah. So I think in both, when I'm writing my own, especially poetry, but even prose, I have this practice of deep listening. Like I arrive at a line or I arrive at a word or a phrase, and then I have to still silence myself to hear what exactly did I mean by it or what else needs to be said that hasn't come through. So I do that with my own writing, and I try to do that also with my translation. So that's why I have like several drafts. I go back and revise a lot. Yeah. So this process of listening I feel like I have to sink all the way down into silence in order to emerge afterwards with what I've understood that needs to be said, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. In my reading, I noticed that it's very lyrical. So the way that you tend to translate is that there's a certain like rhythm in the text. So for instance, when you translate the second stanza, their large window opens to the east, a lazy boy in sandals drags a bucket of water half his size, sedative. There's like a moment of pause, and there's a lyricism or a rhythm that comes through as you read. Is that something that's conscious as you're going through, or is it something that's natural to you now?
It's also Lulieta's own music, I think. So it's her, what is the word in English? The cadences in her poems, or the way her thought arrives on the page. She might have a list of longer lines and then suddenly a short one, because we are listening for how she's thinking through it, maybe. So I try to emulate that in English, or imitate that, or yeah. And sometimes I do, yeah. So like this one, sedative, I don't remember the original, but maybe there may have been a few more words there, but deciding to only use one word instead, a one word sentence, creates that pause so that you can, which reflects what it might have been like to have been present there that day and hearing all those noises, and then suddenly realizing that this means more than what you're confronted with.
I think this is a good place to transition to my question regarding your philosophy of translation. So I'm interested in how you see the whole process, how you would describe it even to a friend outside of the whole process and experience, or even how do you approach a new translation project. What comes first in a very methodical way? Take us through that process.
Okay. Maybe I'll start with what the process is of translating a work. And I would say that it's always different for every work because every work is different, or I feel like the work dictates my approach to translating a book or a collection of poems. Like sometimes I might dive right in and translate the whole thing all the way through and then come back and revise. Another work might be, I just read it once all the way through or read it twice all the way through in Albanian and then start the translation. I've had other works that I'll start and then life gets in the way, so I stop and then I go back and translate the next chapter. It's always different, the process, depending on the work. And then my own philosophy. I think it's all this thing about deep listening. And Albanian actually has a couple of phrases about verivation, which means to put your ear to something, or a verivathnevesh, which is if you hear a lesson, if you're being lectured or somebody is teaching you something, you should put that as an earring on your ear and carry it with you. That's the basic meaning, I think. And I think I am involved in a lot of listening in my own work and my own writing, as well as when I translate. And it makes me think of those radios we had in Albania way back before we would have the freedom to listen to whatever station or channel. So we would put our ear to the little radio knob and then turn the knob either counterclockwise or clockwise to listen to find a signal. And there's a lot of like noise, but then you catch that signal and that's how it is for me when I translate, that I, of course, I have the original, I translated, but that's just the beginning. And I need to arrive at what the art is really capable of through that process of writing, rewriting, rewriting again. So a lot of like turning the knob back and forth.
That's a great metaphor for what the translator is doing, trying to reach the full capacity of the work of art in the new language.
Yeah, so, because I always see the work as being so alive. It's alive. That's why it is always different. Every process of translation for every work is different because the works themselves are alive to me. And by being that there, my approach to them, my relationship to them is always different, and like people. And so I want them to reach their full potential in the new language. So I try. But anyway, I'm not always successful. But yeah, that's it.
That's a great way of putting it. So moving along a bit, or moving ahead to other translations that you've done most recently, you published a translation of your mother, Julia Gica's book of poetry called Memories Pretend to Sleep. I haven't seen that. Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. Yes.
And I wondered, that's such a special experience to have as a translator, to be able to translate one of your parents' works. And I wondered, first of all, what was that like? What struck you about this experience? One thing that seems particularly exciting for me, or would be particularly exciting, is the opportunity to ask the author anything and everything. Mm-hmm. So nothing seems to be off the table there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, tell us about what that was like for you.
Yeah, actually, I have never translated anyone who's not alive. So I don't know. I don't know how good I would be. to do that, because I constantly want to talk to the person about their choices of words. And so with my mother, it was very different than other writers, because obviously I know this woman the way I know her from life as a mother and other things too, and as a poet. But actually, and I've read her work throughout the years, but I think when you're translating, it's a different reading. And I think I was able to get to know a different depth of her, and also finding out that, wow, we are very similar in the sense that we both are kind of like deep listeners. And then we take from that and speak about our experiences in a candid way. I think both of us do. So it was very moving to, I knew that I am like my mother in so many other ways, but just in encountering this through the work of art was even more powerful. And I also think that translating her made me realize that a lot of whoever decides like what goes into the canon of Albanian literature or any literature, it's great we have those people, but at the same time, we need to pay more attention to marginalized voices. And I think hers is one of those. And she's also somebody who was self-taught when it comes to poetry. She never studied poetry formally. And it's important to read works of those people as well, because you get a fuller picture of the range of human experience. And I think after I translated her, I realized this. Yeah. And I don't know what else.
Could you describe just in broad terms what the collection kind of tackles or grapples with? I know that there are a few of the poems I read have to do with the immigrant experience itself, mm-hmm. but what was your take on the collection?
Yeah, so this is selected poems, and this is, I think I have selected them from several of her books in Albanian, maybe four. The poems that are in this one come from those four collections, I think, four or three. Sorry, I'm really bad with remembering some specific dates and numbers and things. But what unifies this book, I would say, yeah, the immigrant experience. So a lot of the poems are about someone who, after arriving here in America, what it was like to be an immigrant after middle age, I guess, to have to work, to completely lose the kind of work you did before, because those skills were not translatable. And so living a completely different life from the one you had started in your previous country, but always maintaining this, hearing this song, which is the poetry for her. And she continued to write and has always continued. She's constantly writing. So yeah, I chose the poems that speak more to that experience, to the immigrant, but a specific kind of immigrant, I guess, the really hardworking one who has to sacrifice so much, but hopefully always hears and listens for that song. Oh, okay, I'm going to start crying. So anyway.
It's a particular experience that's not often featured either in the canon of the immigrant experience, I think. One that's a different time of life to be moving. It's a later stage as well, and having to adapt at this stage is totally different. And it's, yeah, I had a sense that it was a very specific type of immigrant experience that was coming through in the poetry. Mm-hmm. Is there any... I know I didn't ask you ahead of time to read, but if you'd like to, I'd like to give you the opportunity.
From this book, yeah.
Okay.
Which one? There's a couple. Maybe. I really like the first one, and it's not about the immigrant experience, in fact, sorry, but it's the poem that I felt I connected the most with. So this one is called My Train. I have waited at train stations alone, at times jostling through among strangers to find a seat. Then the alarm whistle pierced the heavens, shuffling countless scenes before my eyes. The rhythm of train wheels would follow me till I'd get off. I've waited for my train with my belly round, up to my mouth, my face beaten by the cold rain of impatience. When would my baby rest? When the platform was blocked by freight trains, my train was late. Heavy on my feet, I'd sigh, wanting to go back to the street. My home already vanished. On hands and feet, I'd crawl, my belly to my mouth, under freight trains, anxious of the smallest move until my foot touched the asphalt. My train was full of smiling children riding to school. A slice of cornbread sprinkled with sugar and water in their gelid hands. Under their armpits, textbooks wrapped in bags of cloth. And as if chewed up by mice, torn corners spit out pencils and erasers, breadcrumbs to guide them back. my train heavy with long years of labor and the long daily ledger of accounts. Millions spent on building bunkers ordered by the head of construction. Orders on top of other orders. The last one from the stern commander who'd come to work drunk every morning. At train stations, alone, I've waited with my belly to my mouth for my train. The pristine landscape would fly past me, holding me spellbound, hypnotized. My train, through the locomotive's whistle that signaled an arrival, the noise and the rhythm of the wheels on rails went on snatching my youth completely, seamlessly. So this is from her youth when I think, yeah, she had to work far away and wake up really early and catch a van to get to the job. Mm-hmm. And the freight train was always parked at that time. And it was a very long freight train. In order to arrive to her job, she would have to crawl under it because it was impossible to go all the way around the train to get to the job. And this was a moment when she was, or days when she was pregnant with me. Like I was in her belly. That's what she's referring to.
I like the last line, the snatching my youth. And I also like the belly to my mouth because I can hear the Albanian so strongly in that phrase. But I wonder, because you're translating your mother and their other friends and family friends who might be reading now your mother in the English, mm-hmm. what kinds of responses or comments did you get from people who were able now to read your mother's work in English? Because I listened to a talk on translation a few days ago about someone who translated work, and finally a friend of theirs was able to read this person's work because there was a language barrier between the two. But there was a sense that this person recognized the author in the English somehow. There was some way of it. Huh. Yeah, it was a lovely comment, and a comment to receive, I think, as a translator.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe even your mother. Does she recognize herself in the words that you, or the way that you've rendered her poetry, or what has been her response?
I haven't asked her, or I haven't really heard from Albanian friends or family reading her in English because they always read her in Albanian. But I would like to ask them now. I think a few times that she has mentioned somebody reading the book in English, it's just been that they were very happy that she has been read in this other language, or that her book has had the chance to circulate in another language and be read in a different culture. But yeah, that's lovely, that other comment that you mentioned. And I'm going to see them today I'm going to go to my parents' house after this. So I will maybe talk to them about it. But yeah, also my mother, she can read in English, and that she speaks, both my parents speak English pretty well, even though not fluently. But yeah, I don't know. I haven't really talked to her if she's read this in English. And So thank you for asking me this question.
I'm curious.
I will talk to her. I know she was really proud, obviously, and I was proud to have her arrive in English. But yeah, thanks for asking.
Yeah, it's always interesting to see what kind of reception to a new culture has towards the work.
Mm-hmm.
So another question I have has to do with, goes hand in hand with what we were talking about, this role of cultural mediation or brokering. The translator often has to make claims for the relevance and the inherent value of the work of literature that they're working on or they're translating. So I wanted to hear you talk about the translators' alternate roles as cultural mediators, as even literary agents or advocates who are advocating for a particular work of literature and translation, wanting to bring greater visibility to an author who may still remain unknown to wider audiences beyond their home country. And then maybe we can get into the nuts and bolts of querying publishers and what that actually looks like how you actually make those claims.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so maybe with Lulieta, I think because she already had two collections in English, they had already been published in English, so she was already known in this world, in this American culture or American literature. So it was easy for me to find a publisher because she already had one. We just talked to the same publisher again once we had the work. And then for another work, like for both Gerdet Bajraj, who's from Kosovo, and my mother, I was approached by the publisher, Nina Camberos, who she found Gerdet Bajraj or all these other writers that she'd publishing and bringing awareness to that kind of literature. So I was lucky that she found me. And then I have, obviously, I've queried publishers for other people that I've wanted to translate, or I've submitted either excerpts or short stories or other poems by other people to different literary journals. And some you get published and some obviously you get a lot of rejection. So you just have to get used to that and keep sending things out. But I think it's always good to be and stay connected. So obviously I have my teaching world, like one sphere that I circulate in. And then I have my writing people and friends, and because I'm a writer, and then obviously the literary translation circle. So it's good to always be connected in those spheres and maybe talk about what you're working on. So like when you say brokering, it's a really interesting word also, because I would make a terrible broker, but I think it's important to be open and share like what you're working on with the people that you come in contact with. Because you never know what they might have been reading or what they've heard, like that a certain publisher is interested in. Or so they might say, I saw X author published in X in Y journal. And so that could make me think, okay, maybe I should approach or I should email that person. So yeah, being connected is very important, and reading up what's out there, or who's publishing translation or who's translation in general, not just Albanian literature, because in fact, there isn't enough being published from Albania.
Another way of getting at this, I wonder, when you're doing your querying, you're pitching to publishers or even journals, what are some of the, do you go into the business of, and I don't know why I'm using this commercial language, but there is a certain commercial end of all this, I think, where you're having to find analogs to situate the text within, or what is this in conversation with? Who might this poet be in dialogue with in the Western tradition, or even within the European tradition, or things like that?
Yeah, I think that's very important to talk that way, to compare the work to what it might be similar to, but also what it's doing in its own way, in its own original way, differently from others. And sometimes I think I've found like the right publisher for a particular work, and it just doesn't work because that publisher might be so busy they just don't have the time to publish that particular work in the next, let's say, 3-4 years, because it depends on so many other reasons why something doesn't get picked up at a specific time. So the work that I have to do, or that anyone wants to do, this is to just keep sending things out and to several places. And again, I always feel guilty because I don't do enough of this, because I can't, like I teach, I have like 100 students a day. And then I also want to work on my own writing. And like I said, I do love the process of revision, because I care so much about what the final project looks like in the end, that it takes long. And so I'm like, oh gosh, I'm only one person. I wish I could do more. But it's hard to do more.
Well, there's so much work packed into bringing a language, or bringing a work from one language into another, that's unseen and unrecognized sometimes. Another question, maybe this might be our last question, but when scouting for new works to translate, what is it that you're typically looking for? Or what draws you to a piece of literature once you decided, I love this?
I do think about, or I try to read first, and particularly I read like Pesaje de Fiales, the blog that Ardian Vebiu started, and there's a lot of really good writers there. So I try to sometimes look through and see if there's a new voice that I might be interested in, or somebody might suggest to me, like, have you read someone? What I look for is that I discover something new from the first few pages. I'm not discovering something in terms of maybe syntax or music or the way the writer uses language or the subject matter. If I'm not drawn to it in those first few pages immediately, it's hard for me to connect after that. Mm-hmm. So feeling engaged right away is very important for me. I'm sure there's many different reasons, and I would also translate other things that may not fall into this category, but typically the works that I have enjoyed the most translating and I've done, I think I've put everything into, is when I have that connection with the work immediately, because I'm discovering something there. Yeah.
Cool. So I think that this is a good time to open it up to our audience to ask some questions. Please feel free to drop a question in the chat. Do we have any questions so far?
Yours were great questions, by the way, so thank you.
Okay, we have a question from Olivia Banks. Do you ever worry about hurting the author's feelings if you make an executive decision to cut something out that they wrote?
That's a great question. I try not to do any of that without talking to the author, and or yeah, if I were to cut anything, I would have to explain why it needs to be cut. So yeah, it would have to be a conversation first with the author. It has happened that we would talk about why it doesn't fit or why it needs to be rewritten. Yeah. But always keep an open conversation with the author if you need to do that.
Another question while we're waiting for others is, I'm curious, what are you working on currently?
Currently, it's edits of my own memoir, which is coming out next year. And then I translated a short novel by Visar Zhiti, another Albanian writer. But I have been delayed and I'm behind on revising it. Like I need to really comb through it with a fine comb and go through it and hopefully make it sing the way I hear it sing in Albanian. Mm. So these two are the only things I'm currently working on.
Is this your first work of prose that you'll be translating or that you've translated?
As a book, yes. I've done some short prose translations, like short stories, one or two by Mimosa Husa, and then I did translate a short passage by Ardian Vebiu, and then a long prose poem by Lisandre Kola that was published in a trilingual edition, I think maybe even before Lulieta's Negative Space came out. But yeah, this is a first that is a full book of prose. Well, but it's not exactly prose. I wouldn't call it prose either. It's more like a prose poem too. Sarah's work. Yeah, this particular book.
Oh, okay. We have some more questions trickling in. So one is from Tom. Tom says, I've heard that the Albanian language is completely its own branch on the linguistics tree. First, is this true? And is the Albanian language similar to others, besides that it might have been influenced by Turkish in the past or Italian currently? Interested in anything you have to say on this general topic? Thank you.
Yes, it is. I've seen that, I think, same image or one of these images where they have the world languages on a tree and Indo-European languages are one way. And then Albanian is just one single branch by itself. I know that it has about 40% Latin roots, but really it's a language very separate from others. And it has borrowed words from Turkish language because we were under the Ottoman Empire for almost 500 years, but we have our own Albanian words even for those. So we have, for example, penjere, which is window, but we also have dritare, which is our own Albanian word for it. Yeah, I don't know if it has other languages.
Definitely. Some French and some German terminology that's sometimes come across, I'd say, too.
Yeah, I feel like those are just borrowed into the language, but we have our own equivalent for all of those words. So it's like Albanian is rich in that sense. People understand each other if they use those other borrowed words, but we have our own beautiful Albanian words, and those are all, unique. There's no other language that has the same root for dritare, for example, because it means light. Mm-hmm. The window is where the light comes from.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to hear from someone with a linguistics background. I've always wondered, is it that we can't establish historically the connections between these Indo-European languages, because we don't have written sources that are left over, or how it is that we're that these things are determined? It's an interesting question. Vjosa Muslijev says, thank you for the beautiful conversation, Ani and Susanna. Which contemporary Albanian authors would you gladly translate and recommend, poetry or any other genre? Thank you for the great talk and looking forward to your book.
Hi, this is great to see some names that I know, and Olivia also from, so thank you for asking. Contemporary Albanian writers at the moment, Ardian Vebiu is one that needs to be translated in English. I haven't been in conversation about that with him yet, but or at all at the time, because I have a lot already in my hands. But yeah, him and Visarjiti. And okay, I'm sorry, I don't remember the names. I forget her name. It's a young poet, female poet that I can't think of right now. Sorry. But I don't feel like I'm somebody who can say this or can answer this question, because I haven't been very much in touch in the last 4 years, maybe, with what's being published in Albania right now. I would like to maybe go and actually go physically there and browse through the bookstores and see just because I can always click online and find out information online, but I don't think I would get an authentic answer as to what are some of the current voices unless I was there physically to discover the writers there myself.
I think this is the last of our questions. If you have any other final thoughts, Ani, please feel free to.
Yeah, I tried to write thank you everyone. I meant thank you for being here and for the questions that people wrote and for listening. I'm grateful that some people arrived here, even though it's Sunday, the middle of the day on Sunday, but I'm really grateful we had this time to talk about translation. I mean, I really hope that there will be more translators of Albanian literature in the near future. I hope more people take it on.
Yes, I hope so too. It would be great.
And you do too, right, Susie? You are also translating.
Yes, neglected to introduce myself at the beginning, but exactly. And I translate from Albanian and Bosnian Croatian, Montenegrin and Serbian. So currently I'm translating Ervina Halilis, who is from Kosovo. She's a poet, a young poet, and I'm looking for a publisher now.
Yeah.
So towards the end of that very long and drawn out process.
I wanted to mention Ervina Halilib to Vjosa, who asked the question. Yeah, she's somebody to look for. And also Lydia Dushi, I really like her poetry. But I have tried to translate her and I'm not good at translating because she writes in the Geg dialect. So it's harder. Cevdet Bayray, he's from Kosovo, but he writes in regular, but he writes in Albanian, like the standard Albanian. Yeah, he doesn't really write in a dialect. So that's why it's easy for me to translate him, even though he's from Kosovo. Okay. Lydia Dushi is from Albania, but obviously from Northern, from Shkodra. Okay. And so I love her, even the sound of her Albanian, obviously, but it is hard for me. So I hope someone will come up and pick up her work, really.
I'm excited to read her now that you mentioned that she writes in the Geg, because I feel very comfortable with the Geg myself and less comfortable with the Tosk.
Okay.
So Ilir Zenku has a comment for us. He says, thanks for recommending Paysage for online readings of new Albanian writings. Are there any other digital places you would go to skim through for new writing in the way that you would a bookstore in Tirana?
I don't know. Do you have any that you can share with me, Ilir?
Yeah, it would be great to hear recommendations from the audience. One way that I find new poets or writers to translate is through some of the grants or fellowships that are offered in the region. So there's one that's called Reading in Between. There are certain institutes like Poeteca and Traduki, and so different institutions that are interested in translation as a practice. Sometimes that's the place that I'll find new voices who might otherwise be considered marginal or less well-known earlier in their careers. So,
Does Traduki publish different languages? Like, work in different languages?
I'm not quite sure. So it's a...
Where is it based?
They offer residencies in 10 cities in Southeast Europe, including, I think, Tirana, Belgrade. Yeah, Edir says he likes browsing through Shtepia Libris online to also read feedback from readers on AlbanianAmazon.com. Thank you for the great presentation.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I didn't know about this Shtepia Libris. Okay, so I will look it up as well. Thank you for that.
And with that, I think that we should adjourn. And I want to thank you, Anya, again for being here. It was such a pleasure to speak to you, and for the audience for being here to participate and asking such great questions and having comments. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me and all the great questions, really. I'm honored to be in conversation with you, Susie.
Thank you. To everyone else, have a great afternoon, and hopefully we hope to see you next session.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been Albanian translator and poet Ani Djika in conversation with host Suzana Vujovic, held on April 30th, 2022, as part of the Hidaj Edi Bregu lecture series in Albanian studies at DePaul University in Chicago.
Women in Translation is an audio series showcasing the richness of European women authors, translators, and more. This series is executive produced by Traffica Europe Radio. Please sign up at our website to stay informed about upcoming shows. Thanks for listening.